Hey everyone, welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park, where it is a full house. We have a big show coming up for you. As we said last week, hope you have a long commute and you're at the beginning of it, or I hope you have a big yard to mow, because we're going to be here talking for a long time. Lots to get to. But before we get to the Vikings offseason program and talking about the Vikings, we have two side topics that we need to address right at the start. So we're going to bring in the writers to talk about the team. One of them is Lindsay Young, who really likes the Timberwolves, knows a lot about the Timberwolves. And it was the NBA draft at the end of last week, and the Wolves were big newsmakers, Lindsay. Why?
They were. They pulled off a huge trade in which they're bringing Jimmy Butler to Minnesota.
Right. So for the Wolves to acquire Jimmy Butler, we were talking about this in the studio before you came down.
Okay.
That would be like an NFL team acquiring,
I don't know, like Antonio Brown or someone of that caliber.
Okay. So like one of the better players at his position.
One of the best. Last season, he was averaging like 24 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists a game. Right.
So he's like immediately our most seasoned player. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns is like probably going to, he's got the highest ceiling probably.
Yeah.
Getting Jimmy Butler is like, that's instant offense for the Wolves, right?
And I think it says that the Wolves are sort of like in win now mode. I mean, not to say that Jimmy Butler is old or anything like that, but I think they wanted to bring somebody of his caliber in right now to have with Karl-Anthony Towns.
All right, cool. Second topic before we get to the Vikings. Lindsay, hand the mic to Nate. Okay. Producer Nate Vaughn is going to be on the mic here. Anyone who's followed the Vikings social media accounts saw that there was a contingent of Vikings in an unusual location. Actually, not unusual for Vikings to be there, but unusual for Minnesota Vikings to be there. Tell us about the trip to Iceland.
It's true. Three players, Linval Joseph, Danielle Hunter, and Kyle Rudolph, went to London, not London. Yeah. That's later this fall.
Right.
They went to Iceland though.
Right.
Which is most of the way to London.
Right.
Almost there. but it was a really cool event. We had, like you said, lots of social media posts from there. Mm-hmm. It was a good group of us. We went to do a lot of things to kind of explore the origin of the Viking war chant, as they call it there, which we've adapted to create the Skull chant in stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Craig. You can do it.
Very popular.
There you go.
I like it.
There you go. So to learn more about kind of where that came from, also to, you know, kind of hit on the natural Viking connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's where one of the places actual Vikings are from.
Right.
So that was cool to learn about that. And also just to continue like expanding knowledge and appreciation of football, American football, in Europe and across the world. So in that regard, I think it was a really positive experience. A lot of people were really excited that we were there, gave away a lot of cool swag, a lot of scarves. You know, it's cold there, so Viking scarves.
I actually had someone email me and say, where can I get the scarf that people are wearing on the Viking Snapchat account? I was like, I don't...
Did you bring some back?
I don't know if we had any extras or not. Okay. They came from somewhere, so I'm the wrong guy to ask, but they probably exist somewhere.
Right. All right, cool. And more to come from the trip. I mean, you guys didn't just go there to be on social media. You went there to capture a bunch of stuff.
So we got a lot of stuff, documented the trip from the player's perspective, talked to a lot of people in Iceland about football, about the Viking war chant, and got some cool stuff and some really cool settings there. So
Nate, those three guys are three of our largest players, especially Linval, but you actually were in a position to see someone make Linval look smaller.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we saw Thor, the mountain from Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones coming up shortly, the new season.
Yeah.
So he was excited about that. We got to talk to him. And you're right, he did kind of dwarf even Linval Joseph, which was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then when he took a picture with us behind the scenes, guys, it was even more...
Yeah.
Crazy how big of a man he is.
Pretty cool. All right, awesome stuff. Now, we have Craig Peters and Eric Smith here as well. Craig's going to Dan Patch Days. Eric is playing the U of M golf course, and I'm going to New York City for a work trip. None of that is interesting enough to talk about on the Wobcast, okay? So we're going to skip past all that stuff and start talking about the Vikings.
Sounds good.
The off-season program is over, so we now have five-ish weeks of downtime here at Winter Park in terms of players and coaches not being here, and it just gets slower around here. So until training camp starts. So let's talk about what we've seen from the team in 2017. Not getting into how we finished last season or what we think is going to happen in 2017. Just what we saw during the 11 weeks or so of the offseason program. I'm going to start. And I'm going to take a topic that doesn't really have anything to do with the guys who are going to play starting in 2017. One of the most notable things I thought was watching Teddy's rehab. Really cool. Lots of good news coming from that and optimism. I think that Coach Zimmer and Rick were very upfront about saying he's got a long way to go. So, like, there's not a quarterback competition. There's no question about, like, who's, you know, going to be playing. It's going to be Sam. But given what we all went through and what Teddy has gone through and what we went through and watching what happened to Teddy, it was really cool to see him doing his rehab on the field. Was not participating in OTAs, but was on the field. Awesome to see that because we're all rooting for Teddy to come back. So to me, that was one of the more notable things of the offseason program.
Totally agree.
Yeah, but I want to hear from you guys. And we'll start with you, Craig. Yeah. We're painting with broad strokes right here. And then after you, all three of you go, then we'll dig into some details on some other topics.
One thing on Teddy real quick, though, is when he did get injured, he put out the statement, paraphrasing, but to have a testimony, you have to have a test. And I mean, I feel like everyone here had confidence that he had the mental strength and determination to fight through an extensive rehab process. So it's just so rewarding to see him benefit, receive some fruit of his labor so far and keep climbing.
Right.
That said, I think we're a better offensive team than we were at the end of last season, so that's great. And then that defense, I really wouldn't want to try to go against it.
It's impressive to watch our defense.
Yeah.
And you can see that the offense is in a different place than the defense in terms of how far along they are in the process of becoming a cohesive unit, right? I mean, Shermer has been here now for over a year, but it's really his first season as the architect of the offense. This was Norv's offense last year. Even when Coach Shermer took over, it was Norv's system. Now it's Pat's system. And so, you know, Pat is doing what Coach Zimmer and Coach Edwards were doing in 2014, right? I mean, this is the very beginning of the process of building the system. But Coach Zimmer is going into his fourth year, and you can tell that the defense is a well-oiled machine. Hopefully they stay healthy. And I'm not saying they don't have to improve anywhere. They do. But just watching them, whether it's in the group install, the individual drills, or 11-on-11, you're impressed by the defense.
Oh, yeah, and they can't touch anyone right now either. That's why you know it's fun to watch them.
I think that makes them mad, too.
Yeah, it probably does, yeah. Okay, so the offense looks better to you, given what you've seen. Granted, we haven't seen the offensive line block anyone because we're not in pads, so... The caveat is there's more to go, but from face value, 10,000 foot view, you see improvement in the offense.
I do. I think that the continuity that Sam has been able to develop with multiple receivers will be a real strength. I think that last year it's all like go mode, get chemistry as quick as possible, maximize this or that, and then other receivers, specifically Laquan Treadwell. I think that like a quarterback change is always tough for a young receiver who's got so many other things that he's trying to adjust to at this level. And then just all the receivers looked really solid. Tight ends, the playmaking, the development there, that's great. So all of the non-tackle components of a football practice and physical blocking and everything like that are shaping up nice for like a summer passing league.
Right. So. Right. That's why when we're in training camp, the 9-on-7 period is one of my favorites to watch, and that's why, you know, because you hold your breath on every play because you don't want anyone to get rolled up on. But that's blocking, and it's not taking to the ground tackling, but it's blocking and 90% tackling.
Sure.
And that's why I like that period so much, because it's the only time of the year where we have it. You don't have 9-on-7 in OTAs. You don't have 9-on-7 during the season. It's only in training camp. And I'm excited to see Remmers and Reef in 9-on-7 going against our front. Mm-hmm. So, okay, Lindsay or Eric, one of you is next.
I'll go.
Okay.
So my takeaway actually has nothing to do with any player directly. It is Coach Zimmer kind of spreading his insight around the team. Mm-hmm. You know, he obviously, we all know he's a defensive mastermind, and he's proven that in his career and then since he got here to Minnesota. But on the last day of minicamp, he said, you know, I've been sitting in the offensive line meetings. I've been giving more input to the offense. He feels like he needs to put a little focus on the offense as well, because it, you know, it struggled at times in the couple of years that he's been here. So instead of putting all of his eggs in the defensive basket, he's kind of spreading it around. And I think that'll help the team long term.
Okay, awesome. Lindsay?
I think mine is sort of like almost a compromise between what Eric and Craig talked about. And that's because I think it's something that Coach Zimmer really talked about wanting to do, and we saw him do it, was working on a lot of situational football during the spring practices. So doing a lot of, you know, red zone practice, third down, running through scenarios where it was a certain down with this much time left on the clock, and each side has, you know, X number of timeouts left. So that was really interesting to watch.
And one of them that they did during minicamp was the home game against Detroit that we lost, right?
Yeah, right.
They basically simulated that situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, Coach Zimmer has been very transparent that there were a couple of things that happened last year with clock management or red zone and stuff like that that they obviously wish would have gone better. And so it's been interesting to see an even bigger focus on that this year and watch players work through that.
Yep.
And that's something that's a practice for the players on the field, but for the coaches as well, how they manage it.
And the one thing that I always liked about baseball when I was growing up is you could play in or manage or watch 10,000 baseball games, and as sure as the sun is going to rise in the east, you're going to see a new situation in a baseball game.
Yeah,
it's not quite that way with football, but you do see new situations all the time, and the way to get good at those types of situations is to go through them and to do them. And you're not going to experience them all in a season, so you got to do them in practice. And I like that Coach Zimmer is doing that. We were 4-2, I believe, in one score games
in 2015.
And we were 2-4 last year.
Right.
Four losses by 6 points or less.
So that comes down to two minutes or 4 minutes to go in the game and executing in those spots. And that's why Coach Zimmer does that. So actually, when we were interviewing Coach Zimmer for the schedule release back in whatever it was, April, we were in his office, and when we were kind of setting up and getting people mic'd up, he had a whiteboard. He has a whiteboard next to his desk, and it had a long list of situations. It's not just 2 minute, 4 minute, you know, backed up. It's a lot more than that, and it gets very detailed and specific, and it's good to see that.
And I think that the non-100% certainty of a PAT now has added yet another dimension
of
elements that could change.
No doubt about it. And the more they tweak overtime, which they've done for 2 years in a row now, the more situations are going to come up there as well.
Yep.
Okay. Eric, you just wrote an article about the punting and kicking situations.
I did.
So we're going to switch gears here and go on the micro level on a few topics. I want to hear from you about that. People who didn't read the article, tell us about it.
As of now, I would say it's pretty wide open on both positions. Starting with kicking, obviously it's Kai Forbath and Marshall Kane. Mm-hmm. I tracked field goals during team drills of OTAs, and Forbath was 20 of 24, and Kane was 17 of 20, so fairly even. I talked to Coach Prefer. He said that outside of practice, outside of what we see, they've tracked field goals for 2 months.
Wow.
And it's been over 250 field goals. And one of the guys is at 89%, and the other guy is at 90%.
Okay.
So it's even. And Coach Prefer also said, like, the reason that this is a good competition is that both players are doing well. Like, if both players were missing field goals left and right and they were struggling, that wouldn't be good.
Yep.
You know, because he said both players are kind of rising to the occasion.
Okay.
Punting is kind of tough for us to judge punting and, like, team drills and stuff because they're not really returning them. And, you know, it's not like a full-on game situation. I think once we get to the preseason, that'll be a better indication of that. But Ryan Quigley and Taylor Semenk seem pretty even there too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both those positions are going to be fun to watch in the next month or two.
Okay. So we're not going to predict who we think's going to win or not win, but I want you on the kicking situation with Kai and Marshall to handicap one, like, this guy has a leg up on this guy for this reason. This guy has a leg up on this guy for this reason. Can you do that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Kai has more game experience.
Okay.
You know, he's played, I think it's like 58, 59 career games.
He was perfect last year for us.
Yeah, he was 15-15 last year. He doesn't have the biggest leg. Okay. You know, I mean, I think if you put him 45, 40 or under, he's pretty solid. Kane was out there. He made a 53-yarder one day that was good by at least 8 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can bomb it.
Yeah, okay.
But he doesn't have any... He'd never been in an actual NFL game. He'd been in preseason, but like a regular season game.
I think for those of us who watch practice and for fans who watch our content or who come to training camp, the kicking one is the one that's easiest to see and to evaluate or judge for yourself.
Right. The pretty concrete.
Right. The punting one is a little tougher. The other factor on the kicking one is kickoffs.
That matters. And that's where Kane maybe has the upper leg just because he has a stronger leg.
Right.
But... Kai is definitely working on that too.
Okay. All right. So we'll see what happens. All right, Craig.
Yes.
Talk about Berger, Elfline, Easton, interior O-line, what you saw, not saying what you think the coaches see or what you think the coaches are going to do, just what happened and kind of how it looked.
Well, pretty much throughout OTAs and minicamp, Easton at center, Berger back over at guard, and that's kind of how at right guard and Boone at left guard, and that's kind of how the season finished as well. They did work in the rookie Pat Elfline from time to time, and he took quite a few reps at center. Like a lot of times he was in with the twos and the threes, just getting more reps, and then Zach Kern also. But yeah, I think that the reliability and ability to do multiple things really benefits Berger. I think Elfline has that as well. I think coaches were pretty pleased with the way we ran the ball late in the season with Easton at center.
Okay.
And that, you know, I don't have like the concrete numbers of, or differences or anything like that in front of me or anything like that, but I think that they thought that there was a pretty good push coming forward to run the ball. Now, we may have not always had games in which it was where we could go 35 carries a game.
Yeah.
You know, like we fell behind against Indianapolis. We fell into like a score fest at Green Bay, too.
Yep.
So that kind of takes away rushing opportunities. But I think if they went back and looked, or if we went back and looked, we'd see a pretty good push with that combination. So I think that's a great place to start. You're not throwing a rookie into the deep end of the pool, especially at center, where you have to know all the calls, the protections. I mean, Elfline handled some of that at Ohio State. He said the quarterbacks there also have a role in that, and here the center takes more accountability for that. So I feel like coaches were very measured and excited to work with the combination, because it's all about getting five guys to play as one. But you need to develop, as we saw last year, as many players and get them in combinations. I expect us to have a lot of multiple change it. You know, I expect us to continue experimenting once we can get pads on at training camp and just kind of see what happens.
And were you going to say something, Eric?
Yeah, just real quick. So the Craig talking about like numbers in a running game. I think week 17 against Chicago where Berger was a guard and Easton was in center. I think that was our highest rushing game of the season.
Okay. Yeah. I think about 24, okay. something like that.
And, you know, what you were talking about, Craig, with the combinations and even once we get to camp, like obviously you want to get your five solidified and known and practicing together as soon as you can, you know, because you're right. You want them operating as a singular unit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no other position with that many guys, five, that need to operate as one.
Right.
With that being said, you also want to make sure you have the right five. Yeah. So you don't want to name five just so you have a full camp with five. You want to make sure you got the right combo.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to where Coach Shurmur is in his process of building his unit. You know, mm-hmm. he's in the first year of it, really.
Yeah.
And so I think you're right. We're going to see more combinations. I have to give Nick Easton credit. When they trotted him out there as a starting center at the start of the offseason program, I thought it was set up for Pat Elflein to be the starting center week one. And they were just setting it up for Pat to win the job and to do it progressively mm-hmm. and to earn it and all that. And maybe that will happen. But I think Easton was really competitive and solid. And mm-hmm. he's not just going to lay down so Pat can not come in here and win the job.
Right.
And so I think that's really
cool. That's
great. And I can't wait to watch that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also only going to make us better because whoever does win the center job is going to be the right guy and it's going to be good.
Right. And if it is a good fight, which we presume it will be, we're going to have depth at center. Because really, I mean, I don't know if Zach Kern is going to make the team. Let's say he doesn't. We have three. But if he does, we have four guys who can play center on a moment's notice. You know, so that's good. That's a good position to have depth and knowledge of the scheme.
Exactly.
All right, Lindsay, there are two positions on defense that right now we don't know who the starter is. It's outside linebacker mm-hmm. because of Chad Greenway's retirement.
Yep.
And it's nickel. Back. Yeah, it's nickel corner. Take one of those and talk about what you've seen and what the situation is and what the options are.
Yeah. For the linebacker to fill in Greenway's spot, it was interesting to kind of watch Edmund Robinson and Emmanuel Lemur take mm-hmm. reps at that spot during spring practice. It seems like Robinson has really progressed a lot
mm-hmm.
In the last couple seasons. And just in watching, like, I think he might have a little bit of an upper hand, but I think they each have advantages. But it seems like he has really gotten the hang of this system and of playing with this defense. It will be interesting, too, because we have a lot of situations where we're not playing all three linebackers.
Right.
But obviously they're going to want to have a main go-to guy for mm-hmm. when they do. So that was an interesting competition to watch just during the spring, and I imagine that it will continue during training camp as well. There's also Kentrell Brothers. I think he's a little bit just smaller size, and just his physical makeup maybe doesn't fit him quite as much for that outside linebacker position, but it'll be interesting to see how they use him as well.
Right, and Ben Gedeon as well, mm-hmm. I think, has looked impressive, and then you have Elijah Lee, who I'm of the belief Mike Prefer will find a great way to use him on special teams.
Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
You pretty much have five guys there who should go to camp thinking, if I have a great camp, like maybe I'll be the guy in base defense.
Right.
And what's really interesting, we asked Adam Zimmer about this in our assistant coach interview process, is I'm like, what if the third best linebacker is an inside linebacker? Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, we're going to put the best three linebackers on the field.
Right. And it will be interesting too, because like you mentioned, I mean, I talked to Edmund and Lemur, but those two guys have come in to spring practices being familiar with the system already. And so the rookies, like as they continue to get their feet wet in that system, you know, will hopefully progress as well. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see where that competition goes.
Is Brothers more of a – did he profile the middle linebacker? Is that what you meant by three best linebackers?
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Most of the reps were second behind Kendricks at middle.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think Zimmer is multiple enough. Mike Zimmer is multiple enough with his schemes and ideas where he doesn't need to be rigid about outside linebacker, inside linebacker.
Sure.
I think you can just give him three good athletes and he'll make it work, especially because of what you said, Lindsay, where you're in sub packages so much more often now in the NFL where you're not playing with three linebackers in your base defense more than 40% of the time, really. And it's closer to 30% than it is to 50% with the way things are going.
I thought Barr had a nice offseason this time around, too.
Okay.
He was dinged up, didn't get to participate a bunch last year, but I thought that was good, and I thought it was good for the younger players to see.
Yeah.
He seemed really fired up.
Good.
He was jawing a lot at the offense and just ready to go.
And that could be natural maturity for him. And I wonder also, you know, when Chad Greenway leaves.
I was just going to say that.
Okay, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I he's the alpha male there. And so I think if you're Barr and you're one of the better players on the team, you may feel a little less inclined to be what you're saying, Eric, and be vocal and in people's faces when you have another alpha male who's 11 years in there. Right? I mean, and so Greenway leaving is not good at all. We don't like that. But it was he retired and it's time.
Yeah.
But you can have silver linings in things happening that you wish didn't happen. And maybe one of them is Barr taking the next step in that development.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So the nickel corner job is basically a Mac Alexander, Terrence Newman situation. And, you know, my perspective on that is, if it's Mac, that's great because the plan is working. I mean, they took Trey Waynes in the first round in 2015, knowing that Captain and Terrence were basically year-to-year propositions at this point. And then they took Mac Alexander the next year in the second round, knowing the same thing, that we're on year-to-year propositions with our two veteran-most corners. It's worked out for Trey, I think. I think last year was a good step forward for him, and now it's time for Mac to do the same. So if Mac is the guy, that is great. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to have a contingency plan like Terrence Newman in place, where if Mac does not take the step forward that you wanted him to, or if he gets hurt, I think you can play Terrence inside. And so in terms of handicapping that whole battle, you know, the thing that Terrence does not have going for him is that he can play outside, inside, or safety.
Yeah. Right.
And so he's almost got more value as a super sub.
Yeah.
And this is a problem that a lot of people who played basketball had if they were the sixth man on their basketball team.
Right.
They were probably one of the five best players, but they didn't get to start because they were good enough at multiple positions that the coach saw more value in that guy as a bench player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the situation with Terrence. So that'll be fun to watch at training camp. Speaking of training camp, give me a player that you're most excited to see once we get to Mankato. And it can be a guy like Barr, a veteran that we've seen enough of, or it can be a young player, a rookie. For me, it's probably going to be one of the guys playing the offensive line. Like, I kind of want to see what Reefer Remmers look like in a 9-on-7, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Pad.
Yeah, but give me
Especially against, say, Everson or
Daniil.
For sure.
Daniil or
yes.
Brian Robinson.
Right.
Yeah, that would be pretty juicy.
But give me a player that you're excited to watch. Eric, we'll start with you.
I have one on both sides of the ball. Actually, the two that popped in my head were Barr. You know, I want to see him, how he kind of responds after kind of a down year for him, and I think he'll be ready to go. But also Dalvin Cook when you get in pads. And he's looked great in shorts, you know, and I'm not saying he's slow in pads, but – you know, it'll be kind of a different element knowing he can get hit, and yeah, it'll be exciting.
Okay. Lindsay?
I was going to say Latavius Murray because
I'm hoping that he's
ready to go by camp.
He was in my mind too.
And that we can see him just in action because we haven't yet. So just to see him out there, I think, is what I'm most looking forward to.
And to dovetail off of that and what Eric and Craig talked about earlier, is running in short yardage and goal line and being better running the ball. Murray had, I think, was it 11 of his 12 touchdowns from inside the 10?
I believe
it's a stat I've regurgitated 1,000 times, so I hope that's accurate. But like, he's probably the guy
right.
in the red zone who's right. who's going to carry the rock down there.
Yeah.
So, all right, Craig.
Yeah, there's a lot to pick from.
You're scanning for the Mississippi State players right now, right?
There are none.
Okay. Well, we don't have any of those.
Yeah, none right. of those. I think people will enjoy seeing Laquan's development. Yeah. I'll stay in state. I'll even give props to the rival school.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Player from the rival school. But I think that people are going to be excited about that. I think that Daytone Jones, I'm really excited to see him in a position that fits him better, because mm-hmm. we've kind of played against him for a couple years, yeah. but now we get to see him in purple,
yeah.
not green, yeah. and that's so much better.
Yeah, and it'll happen twice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it'll be some interior line battles, so it's a little bit tougher to see, but there'll be some isolated yeah. drills too.
For sure.
And I feel like there's an energy in the crowd in Mankato on those days with those head-to-head D-line, mm-hmm. O-line matchups.
For sure.
There's just a buzz.
Yeah. And I think that position D-line really illustrates what we were talking about earlier with the linebackers, the multiple nature of Mike Zimmer's philosophy. I mean, you have Daytone Jones, who is listed as an end but can play tackle mm-hmm. if we want. I think Will Sutton has a little flexibility in that mm-hmm. way. Obviously, Shamar Stephan does, because he was a three-tech last year, and he's backing up Linval at nose right now.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Robinson can move all over the place.
Yeah.
Jaleel
yeah.
Johnson, they say, can be a nose, but looks like a three. I mean, so...
Mm-hmm. Tom Johnson.
Tom Johnson, yeah, lots of versatility there, so yeah. I like that. All right, any last things that you want to hit on that you saw in the offseason program, because we're going to go to fan mail next. Anything we need to touch on?
I was just going to mention one more quick player yeah. to watch when they get into pads and stuff, and that's David Morgan.
Yeah.
There's just been a lot of buzz about him by his teammates and by Coach Zimmer this spring. And so I think it was B-Rob that said, like, there are going to be things that fans see from him this year that they haven't seen before. So Everson and Daniil talked about how he's gotten so much better with his footwork and his hand placement, and that he's mm-hmm. really a good challenge for them out there on the field, which is exciting to see. So it'll be interesting when everybody has pads on to hopefully that continues. Yeah.
The forgotten man in the tight end position group, really,
yeah.
is David mm-hmm. Morgan.
Right.
With Rhett Ellison gone, maybe there's a niche for him to fill,
right?
Aside from just catching passes, right. you know, and that's on special teams and offense in yeah. the blocking game.
I had one more thing to say, and it's not really a look back, it's more like a peek ahead, but obviously camp is going to be a little different this year with the rookies and young guys going 3 days early.
Yeah.
Zim talked a lot this offseason about spending more time with the young guys, and I think that'll be good, so they can have, I think, 2 or 3 days of practice, so that when the veterans get there, they're not maybe wide-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little more ready to go.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I like that. A lot of teams do that, and we hadn't really a lot in my time here, but I like that philosophy. All right, let's go to some fan mail. Nate has the fan mail. He's going to read the questions, and while he's getting it ready, I want to bring in one that we had last week, which was fun for us to talk about, and Nate and I opined on it. It was a fan emailed and is like, okay, here's the deal. It's 3rd and goal at the end of the game, and we're down by 4 points. We need a touchdown. Who's getting the ball in that situation? The ball's on the 1-yard line. What are you doing to score a touchdown this year for the Vikings? Because this is an area where we struggled a lot. So my deal was, assuming that you only have one play left, I'm play actioning, mm-hmm. I'm moving Bradford, and Bradford is throwing to Rudy or Laquan Treadwell on some sort of combo route. Ooh. So that's my answer. I went the passing route. So a do or die play on the 1-yard line with no time left and you need to score a touchdown. Who's getting the ball?
David Morgan getting the ball.
Wow.
There you go. On a play that we ran last year.
Tight end trap?
Yeah.
Wow. I like it.
Instead of Rhett, we'll just give it to David Morgan, and him and his hair will... Okay. Fly into the end zone.
Find a way to get in. I like the creativity. That's awesome. Okay. Craig?
You can't deny the size of target that Kyle Rudolph or Laquan would be in that situation. I kind of like it's going to have to be a pretty quick play, though. So the explosiveness of Diggs could probably be mm-hmm. a pretty good.
Okay.
And you know Bradford's accuracy is pretty darn good, too.
Yep.
So, I mean, Stephon, go beat your man. Bradford zips it in.
Okay.
We're all happier.
All right.
I really want to say Linval, but
that's earlier in the game.
Yeah. I probably would have said play action pass as well, but I'll go with Latavius on that one. You know, he's a big bodied guy, and I think he could get it in there.
Okay, I like it.
Back to your stat. Give him another one.
That's right.
12 or 13.
That's right. He'd be one of one for 2017, right?
Yeah.
Right. We have fresh questions, though. That's an old one that we used from last week. Nate's got three new ones, and we're all going to answer. We'll take turns, and there's one really cool one that I can't wait to get to, but we'll do that one last, the one about the jerseys, Nate. The other two we'll do first. What do you got?
All right. The first question is from Ben. He says, with competition at a number of spots, do you have a competition at long snapper? Also, who is in the lead for the backup quarterback spot? I assume Case Keenum being a Shermer guy. So let's start with the long snapper. Do we have a competition at
long
snapper?
I'll take that one. I'll take that one and let the writers handle the more difficult one.
No,
there's not. Kevin's competing against himself. I mean, if he totally is awful, you know, I mean, Coach Zimmer will switch it out. But
I mean, he's been spot on.
He's the guy.
And he knows that people around him are competing for jobs. So he will push himself to be
that's a good point.
As good as he possibly can be because he knows that that's what teammates need.
Kevin McDermott is the long snapper.
Yes.
All right. Quarterback.
Take the easy answer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Quarterback.
I think it's too close to call right now. I mean, there is no answer.
Okay.
I mean,
that's good. That's a good sign for Taylor, by the way. I mean, I think so. When we signed Case, I was like, okay, so he's the backup, but you're saying it might be too close to call. Okay.
I think both should good things. Sorry, Lindsay.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I kind of assumed the same thing that you did when we signed Case, but I thought Taylor looked pretty good, and I think there were really awesome flashes from both of them, and then, you know, a couple not-so-great plays from both of them. So I do think it's too early to say there's a clear front runner.
Okay. Question number two.
All right, question number two is from Miles. He says, earlier this year I asked you about C.J. Ham. Do you remember that, Wabi?
I do remember
that. Okay. Mm-hmm. He asked about C.J. Ham, and now that OTAs and minicamp are over, what have you seen from him on the field so far? As a follow-up, he says, will the Vikings elect to put him on the 53-man roster this year? He did score two preseason touchdowns, and Miles says he knows we rarely put a fullback on the field, but if he's solid at blocking, he could be a wise change-up, perhaps, for the red zone offense.
Mm-hmm. I should have put him as my answer for 1 yard line.
I was just going
to
say that.
All right, I have a lot of things to say on this topic, like little tiny things, and so I'll let you guys go and see if any of you guys included in what you say, and then I'll put a kind of a cap on this situation. So anyone who has something to say about the fullback and CJ Ham, go ahead.
I think he's looked good. I mean, he's kind of learning a new position.
He is, yeah. He was a running back, you know. So now he's playing fullback.
He seems like he's doing well. We're not going to line up in an I formation every down and running down, so it's not like he's going to be on the field all the time, but there are certain scenarios where he's going to be needed.
Okay. Don't you think, Craig, that a byproduct of Adrian not being here is possibly less emphasis and use of a fullback?
I can definitely see that.
And since there is, I mean, Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman want competition everywhere they can create competition. We don't have a Pro Bowl, a returning Pro Bowl caliber fullback. So you would think, like, if we were going to have a fullback, there would be competition there. But we only have one fullback on the roster. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that maybe they're tentative about even having a fullback.
Yeah.
If we have one, it's going to be CJ Ham.
And one that can do multiple things in that regard as well. And I think he'd be a good teamer, too.
Special teamer. I agree with that.
I was going to say, like, if they do stick with having a fullback and transitioning CJ into that position, I mean, I think that's best case scenario for him because he's kind of built like a fullback. Mm-hmm. And it does, like you guys just said, add a little bit more depth to running back if anything happened, if they needed anybody there. It gives them a fullback option for some of those plays where they need extra blocking and special teams. But, you know, it will be, I guess, interesting to see if they do or don't use one, but I do think they like him.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that having him switch positions tells us they like him.
Yeah, right.
And the other caveat to this is he has practice squad eligibility remaining. Right. So he's a guy that they can, you know, after they expose him to waivers, they can put him on the practice squad to keep developing him. So interesting situation to watch. There's only one fullback on the roster, which tells me they're not committed to the position.
Yeah.
But I think they're committed to CJ.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yep.
You know, which is why he's still here. All right. Nate, question number three.
The final question, the question you're excited about.
Yeah, this is a fun one. I like the weird different questions, like last week's game situation question.
Right.
I like a lot.
I'm excited about it.
So this question has a few stipulations,
okay,
if you will.
Let's go.
We're going to set the scene. You are a fan, and you have to choose two jerseys. We're going to assume they're Vikings jerseys. Mm-hmm. To buy with the following restrictions.
Okay.
Which jerseys would you choose? Number one, one jersey has to be an offensive player. One has to be a defensive player. Number two, the players have to be under the age of 27. And number three, because it's a long-term investment, a jersey, you know, you're not just going to buy any random jersey. It's a long-term investment. It has to be players you can envision sticking around with the Vikings for at least three more years. So offensive player, defensive player, under the age of 27 that you think will stick around for 3 years. Thank you for the question, Jerry. Let's hear what you guys have to say.
All right. Who's got it? Who's going first?
I'm going to let Craig go first because I got thrown off by someone's age.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, so Xavier Rhodes just turned 27. Is he
27 and younger or 26?
Under the age of 27.
So he's out. He's out. Yep. Xavier's
so
out. Harry's out.
Xavier are out.
Oh, man.
That's what threw me
I
off.
I wonder why the age 27 was.
I don't
like
know.
But he's making it fun.
Yeah, I love the question, yeah,
it's
first
kind
of all.
It's kind of fun to think about. Xavier basically would be a great answer.
Harry.
He doesn't count. Harry right, would be a good answer.
Too old.
Doesn't count. Yeah. You're ready to go,
yep,
Lindsay?
I got mine.
All right, let's go.
All right. All right.
I think we're all going to pick the same player on defense.
I don't know.
We'll see.
So defense, I'd say Eric Kendricks would be my pick.
Yeah.
And then offense, I got to go with the Minnesota guy, Adam Thielen.
I love it. That's who I would have gone with if I was going first. Thielen would have been my pick, but I have backup, so don't worry. All right.
Well, do you want to go ahead so no one else takes your
No.
Or do you have that many
backups?
We'll
just challenge him.
Nope. I want you guys to go first.
Okay. On defense, Danielle Hunter.
Okay. Really
is
good.
Is that Eric? Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good one,
Yeah. So that one's just, you know, such a great start for him. Mm-hmm. Love everything he's done so far, the way he's approached things. He's mature beyond his years and just so coachable and so gifted. He this is only the beginning of hopefully something just incredibly wonderful for him.
Yep.
So that's good. And then offense is a little bit tougher,
mm-hmm.
I'll be honest. Dalvin Cook, right?
Yep.
So
one
of my best friends is a huge Florida State fan, and he said Dalvin Cook is his favorite Florida State player ever.
Wow. That's above impressive. Deion Sanders?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got, yeah.
Maybe he didn't get to watch Deion like he got to watch Dalvin.
Yeah, right? So. I think there's a caveat to that because he's slightly younger, so he probably didn't see Deion in college. By the way, T. Newman did a great Deion impersonation at one of the practices.
Yes, he did.
Zimmer probably was watching.
Yes.
And if he could see that on his film feed, he probably had a little chuckle.
And I want to submit an underrated Florida State player, Charlie Ward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He did a little bit
of everything.
Yeah.
You can get his basketball jersey, too.
Yeah, you're right. I can get it this weekend because he played for the Knicks.
There you go.
I'm going there. Yeah, okay.
Nice.
All right, Eric, you're up.
Pressure's on.
So I was going to pick Daniil, but let's see. I'll go offense. I'll go Laquan. I think he's going to have a much improved season. I think he has a good future ahead of him, even if he had a kind of a rough rookie year. And defense... I guess Barr qualifies, so I'd probably pick Barr.
Yeah, you guys picked all the defensive players I was going to pick, honestly. So
how can you not though?
Yeah, my answer would have been Kendricks.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think he's the best player on our defense that no one talks. I mean, he's I mean,
he flies under the radar.
I think he does. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, Linval's really good, and Xavier is really good at a premium position. Harrison is the leader.
But Kendricks is kind of the drumbeat.
Yes. You know? I mean, and he's on the field every snap, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he would be the one. Lindsay and I were talking just while you guys were talking. No one said Diggs on offense.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought when you guys said, oh, okay.
No one said Diggs.
That would have been my other.
That one's
That's
still
a
there.
Good choice.
Yeah.
But I'm going with Teddy.
Yeah.
I'll buy Teddy.
I thought about that.
Give me a Teddy jersey. Sentimentality.
I thought you already had one.
No, I don't have one, but I want one. And so I'm going with Teddy.
There you go.
And, you know, just to give him a little bit of support, some off the field support.
If you got a Kendrick jersey, we probably have to buy you a wig too.
Yeah. Yeah, you would. Also, he never said anything to me, which tells me he doesn't watch the pick six. What a jerk.
Oh, but about the hair question?
Yes, you saw it. Someone asked, "Who does Eric Kendricks have better hair than Troy Polamalu had?" I said, not yet. I mean, I'm going
to
give Kendricks.
I mean, you have a while to go before you get there.
Yes. I want to give Eric a lot of credit for a lot of things. Eric Kendricks, a lot of credit for a lot of things. But he does not have better hair than Troy Polamalu. Not that I am the one who should be judging hair.
Yeah.
By any stretch.
We're hoping he gets the deal with Head and Shoulders, and maybe Coach Kennedy Polamalu can help negotiate a little bit.
Grease
the skids a little bit.
Yeah.
Grease the skids a little bit.
Better hair between Kendricks or David Morgan?
Oh, Kendricks.
I think Kendricks is better.
I agree.
Morgan's is just, it's kind of grindier and just
it's
like.
Grody. It's grody. The word you're looking for is grody.
Grody. Okay, yeah. Again,
my mom said
I'm
that
not,
word.
I'm not the foremost authority on hair. Grody. Got it. Kendricks has the better hairdo for sure. Yeah. All right. Is that it?
Okay. It was a lot
Let's
of fun.
Today.
That was a lot
was
of fun.
A fun one.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
People who are listening, make sure you keep coming back to the Vikings app, to Vikings.com, to the Vikings social media channels. The players are away, but we're still here producing content. The guys and gals at VEN are working on a ton of stuff. You guys are hard at work on game programs, yearbooks, training camp playbook, all that stuff. Lots of really good stories that will come from your efforts there. So everyone should stay tuned to Vikings.com and all of our various platforms for more content to come. We thank you for listening to this. On behalf of our awesome writing crew and producer, Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, signing off for now. So, yeah!